Welcome to the second annual, second ever probably second only all Junk Food Cinema Live at Convergence 2015. How's everybody doing?
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
If you don't have the slightest fucking clue who we are, I don't blame you. I'm Brian Salisbury. I have been a film critic, podcaster, general, annoying internet gadfly for about 6 years. And I am joined on this podcast by a good friend of mine, a film critic himself for several years, turned novelist, turned screenwriter, turned lieutenant in goddamn Megaforce.
Goddamn right.
Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
Hello. And see, this podcast is about the tasty, the cheesy, the at times nutritionally bereft films that we absolutely love. They're always satisying. And it's called Junk Food Cinema because, like the futility of reading the nutritional facts on a candy bar, we know these movies are sometimes bad. We get that.
Or not good for you.
Not good for you at all. But we still enjoy the experience of consuming them. And so what we do is at the end of every show, we compare the movie to a particular snack food item and kind of create the perfect indulgent experience. We're kind of the irony-free bad movie podcast that often we also spotlight absolutely phenomenal films that haven't gotten a fair shake. However, today we're talking about a film that we genuinely love that dodges high art and auteurism like they were bullets. Today we kick off our month-long buddy cop series with
Tango and
Cash. Tango and Cash, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't seen it, it is the greatest film of all time, and it sounds like this. Possibly the greatest theme song.
Never.
Never. The greatest theme song. Never. So you may have heard one or two supposed film literati try and tell you that this movie
fucking sucks. I mean, this is the biggest pile of shit.
This is a lie. By the way, this is an absolute lie. Tango and Cash is the coming together of two powerhouses, two amazing titans that action audiences have been clamoring to see since the beginning of the decade. I'm speaking, of course, of... it wasn't actually Stallone and Schwarzenegger. We did finally get that pairing many years later in a geriatric franchise called You're Not Fooling Anybody-ables.
Which, 15 years from now, we will probably cover.
We will probably cover The Expendables when it becomes classic enough. But it was actually the pairing of... not Stallone and Swayze. Although, do you guys realize how close we came to getting this movie? Patrick Swayze was originally cast as Gabriel Cash. So we came this close to having Sylvester Stallone and Patrick Swayze in the same movie. Unfortunately, Swayze left this project to go make some reprehensible piece of garbage called... No, actually, Roadhouse is amazing. I can't blame him for that. That's a lateral move, but a really solid lateral move. I don't know. What do you think? Roadhouse or Tango and Cash?
Well, you know, I like the idea of Swayze and Stallone together, but there's no roller skating in this movie.
There is no roller skating.
And if you're going to get Swayze for anything, you get him for a roller skating movie. It is a true statement.
Everyone listening at home, every time Cargill talks about Skate Town USA, I think I die a little inside. You're not wrong.
I'm slowly killing you that way.
You are. You are like
Skate Town USA is a magical, magical fucking experience that should be shared with everyone.
You're like pod cancer. You are slowly killing me. Welcome to Stage 3 Junk Food Cinema here at Convergence 2015.
Brought to you by Skate Town USA.
Brought to you by Skate Town USA. I think is great about this is I way prefer the combination of Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell to anything that ended up happening with Sylvester Stallone and Schwarzenegger, because Kurt Russell has a lot of personality, and it's a nice pairing with Stallone's, what's the best way to put it, monosyllabic je ne sais quoi, which, by the way, is something he could not say.
Monosyllabic je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi. Yeah, no, you totally got it. But now, in most buddy cop movies, you guys probably know this, the way it works is that they pair up two people who are completely diametrically opposed. Like, that's the whole point, is you have these polar opposites that are forced to work together. But Tango and Cash, those two guys are both hotshot cops who love to talk a lot of shit, they relish the spotlight, and they really love killing people.
They love violating rights.
Yeah.
Like, for no apparent reason. the opening of the movie, Sylvester Stallone has tracked down these guys who are driving a truckload of cocaine, and he pulls ahead of them. He's gotten out of jurisdiction. It is illegal for him to be there. So what does he do? He pulls his car across the road, gets out, and just starts wildly shooting at the drivers. Fuck it. I know they're guilty. I haven't proved it yet, but I'm going to fucking unload my pistol because I'm a badass rogue cop. Renegade cop.
A renegade. By the way, unload my pistol would have been a great alternate title for this movie.
But then people would have thought I'd stop him or my mom will shoot.
I which told you not to bring
great,
that up.
Which is another great team up, you know, Estelle Getty.
You use that word a lot more than you should. Great. I don't know about
I don't
great.
Know, but going on what you're talking about, one of the magical things about Tango and Cash is it's kind of like, they're kind of like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of the buddy cop world. Because it really doesn't matter who's who. Like you pointed out, well, he's Gabriel Cash. It doesn't fucking matter who's Tango and Cash. They're just called Tango and Cash, and eventually one of them will go, Tango
Cash,
and then for a minute you know who they are, but there's that great moment where Jack Palance gives that speech that's very much
Tango
like the Queen's
and Cash.
That Cash and Tango. It's Cash just like the Queen's Tango. Speech from Hamlet when she's like, "Dear Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, dear Guildenstern and Rosencrantz," because we know it doesn't fucking matter which is which.
It really doesn't. I mean, the differences between them that the movie tries so hard to get across is that Stallone is rich, he reads the paper. Oh yeah, Stallone reads, guys. Just so you know.
And that girl that's 20 years younger than him, totally his sister.
Yeah, totally not his live-in mistress, which was a little hard to discern from the beginning of the movie, which is weird. But he's also a lot tidier than his somewhat sloppy new partner, Cash. So it's less 48 Hours and more The Odd Couple. Which, by the way, flawless Photoshop work. I don't know. People at home who can't see this, just know that on the screen right now is the greatest piece of Photoshop work ever conceived. But yeah, that is a really weird thing. They're not that different whatsoever. They're like night and slightly later on that night.
Like dusk and dawn.
They're like dusk and that period of dusk right before it gets really dark. That's pretty much how it works. Let's talk a little bit about FUBAR, which is an acronym. Yes. It's an acronym that gets used a lot during this movie, and it stands for Tango.
Fucked up beyond all recognition.
Tango.
Cash.
So FUBAR, which, by the way, is just great. It was a word I think I used as a kid to convince my mother I didn't know any swear words. So it's like I would just say FUBAR instead. But it actually adequately describes the production of Tango and Cash, which is one of the, like, it's an Ishtar-sized disaster of a production. The fact that this, by the way, the miraculous thing, and I want to stress one more time that we love this movie, but it is a miracle that this movie was ever released, because at this point in time, I still don't know who the hell actually directed the movie.
There were
like four different people. You had the original director, a Russian, who was fired when the movie went $20 million over budget. I'm going to say that one more time. $20 million over the budget that it was initially given in 1989. So this would be like, I haven't done the exact math, but with inflation, I think that would be like if Avatar cost another Avatar to save Avatar. That's pretty much what happened. And so the original director gets fired, and they're like, okay, we'll let the second unit director direct the movie. No, we don't like him either. So we're going to bring in the director I shit you not, of Purple Rain to finish this movie. And
purple
that...
Purple Rain.
And when they couldn't purify Tango and Cash in the waters of Lake Minnetonka by bringing in the director of Purple Rain, they decided that it didn't matter who directed it. They were going to let Stallone direct a few scenes, you know, kind of on the down low. And then Warner Brothers...
Action!
Go! Is he saying go? I don't understand. Cut? What? Who is this? But by the way, speaking of Stallone and being way too hands-on in productions, Stallone actually...
Hold on. They're trying very carefully not to disturb the
No
podcast.
One will notice you.
Like shuffling across the floor.
That's...
And they're doing a wonderful job of not being noticed at all.
Yeah. Thank God we're not the kind of dicks who would point out when people show
Those
up.
Those guys would be assholes.
Just to bring up speed, Junk Food Cinema, Tango and Cash.
Yeah, Odd Couple. Odd Couple.
Fubar, Tango Cash. Good. We're good. You're
Tango.
Up to speed. Cash. So Stallone being way too hands-on is actually something of Hollywood lore. It's been pretty much every production. One of my favorite stories, by the way, is from Demolition Man, where, if you remember at the beginning of Demolition Man, he is
sentenced... Which, of course, all of them do.
Which you should if you're listening to this or here at Convergence at all.
I don't know if they would. We haven't talked about Demolition Man yet.
We should. Take a drink. By the way, drinking game for Junk Food Cinema. Anytime we talk about an episode we're going to do in the middle of an episode we are doing, take a drink. That happens a lot. But so on Demolition Man, he gets arrested for... I don't know, letting somebody else blow up a building. I don't really understand what his crime was. But he gets frozen for like 75 years. And they're walking to the cryo prison. And he's being escorted down the hallway by two guards. Now, originally, these two guards were played by, what's the word? Actors. And Stallone walks up on the first day of shooting and looks at the two guys, realizes they are both taller than him, and has them fired. So instead of... Actors. Instead of actors, he gets two grips who happen to be shorter than him to play the role of the two guards. One of my favorite stories of divaism from an action hero ever. And on this movie, on Tango and Cash, he fired the director of photography. By the way, Stallone fired him, as in Stallone, who is not in charge of this production at all, fired the original director of photography because he didn't feel the guy was lighting him correctly. And that director of photography was Barry Levinson. So on his resume, it probably says, hey, all the movies I directed, fired by Stallone because I couldn't make him look more handsome with lights, which is just sad. It's just a sad state of affairs. So after the three directors, they go through three directors. They're like, okay, well, Warner Brothers, like, we're going to take the movie away from them. We're going to give it to our editor and he'll fix it. Except
that always works.
It always works. Except that when they saw the final cut...
I will say sometimes it does work.
Well, it worked on Sinister.
Oh, that's a low blow.
I'm just kidding. Nothing worked about
that. That's a low blow there. Day job.
I will take that. No, Sinister's actually really good. So...
We should talk about that on an episode. Take
a drink. If we keep drinking like this, I'm going to have to break into the floating beer. Which, by the way, Cargill, one of the greatest things you've ever come up with. This is amazing.
Yeah, well, they brought it in. They for those of you at home that don't know what's going on, they brought us in these nice pitchers for water to drink. But
like humans.
We don't drink water.
Yeah.
So we emptied them out for displacement, and we're now using them to chill our beers.
It's because fish fornicate in it. That's why I only drink beer. What were we talking about? Tango and Cash. Tango?
Cash?
Yes.
Sorry, we lost internet and we lost...
oh, no!
We lost three of our five viewers.
I like that you can insult me and you at the same time. That's an art form, definitely. Warner Brothers says, we're going to let the editor fix it in post. You know, like, fuck it, we'll do it live kind of thing.
We'll do it live!
We'll do it live, which is kind of what's happening right now with us. So they see the first cut of the film, and they realize that the first editor wanted to make this a serious drama
I think he said, I think the phrase was they wanted it to be darker in tone.
Yeah, he didn't think it should be...
Which is fair, considering some of the shit that happens.
But he didn't want it to be a comedy. It is a comedy. Like, you can't change the genre in execution.
Do we need to talk about the spaghetti joke?
Yes, we do need to talk about the spaghetti joke. Wait, 2 seconds. this is the other thing we do. We get off topic very easily. So they decided that they're going to bring in, what did they call him? A supervising editor named Stuart Baird, whose job was to fix the movie that the other guy was trying to fix. So at this point, still no idea who actually directed Tango and Cash. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about said spaghetti scene. And frankly, about all of the weird dialogue in this movie, which considering how much Stallone decided he was in charge of the movie, I have to believe was ad-libbed. And also, because of how terrible the dialogue is, I have to believe was ad-libbed. But there's a line where Stallone breaks into the house of the FBI guy who has set him up, and the FBI guy is played by Louis Arquette, who is a great actor, but unfortunately gave us David Arquette, so I haven't forgiven him for that. Really? Oh, I'm sorry, a lot of David Arquette fans in the audience?
Really? Hey, David Arquette has done some wonderful, wonderful things.
And then he won the WCW title, so...
Well, have you seen his wrestling movie?
I'm not even going to answer. Yes, of course I have. That's why I will not forgive him. Louis Arquette is carrying a plate of spaghetti which falls on the floor, and Stallone's actual line with a straight face is... It's obvious from your diet that you're not too concerned about counting calories. Is that because you stuffed your face with all the money they paid you to set us up? And I was like, wait, hold on. How did you get there from seeing spaghetti on the floor? I don't know. It's like the greatest, worst segue ever. It's like he looked down at the spaghetti and went, oh, yeah, this is what I have to use. This is my prompt. It's like a bad improv artist who's given a prompt and is like, okay, I got to get from point A to point B, and those are the only two letters of the alphabet I know. So, do you eat money? Like, that's really the question that I come up with that line, because I have never had money, so I don't know this. But this, I don't... that's the kind of dialogue that goes on throughout the whole movie. Like, when they're in the courtroom scene, and he tells the guy, like, we're going to have a party for this guy that's testifying against them. And Tango says, or Cash says, I'll bring the beer. And Stallone says, I'll bring the chainsaw.
No, but it's the other way around. It's like, I'll bring the chainsaw.
I'll bring the beer. Because those two things go together if you're at Toby Hooper's house. But other than that...
Or at Junk Food Cinema.
Or at Junk Food Cinema. That's very true. So all of that is going on. You have all of those problems to the point that I still cannot tell you who directed this movie. But then Stallone and Russell, one of the things I do legitimately love about this movie is how recklessly entertaining it is. And by that I mean people came very close to dying on the set of Tango and Cash. You may remember during the climax, you know what? One more time, I just want to see, yes, thank you, because it's beautiful. So you may remember that the climax of the movie, they are driving through this quarry in what can only be described as the A-Team van of the future, and
or as a black painted band from Megaforce.
All right, as a black painted band from Megaforce. No, that's actually
it's a really cool band covered in guns for no apparent reason. Why would the LAPD have this? We have no fucking.
Why
idea.
Does the LAPD have a Q branch? Why are they making?
Why are they making exploding fuzzy Doberman pinchers? I don't know.
It's they like are. The guy who invented the ShamWow. It's like if he was in charge of R&D at a police force, because they're making all of these products that are clearly going to be sold on late night television for the private sector. What I don't understand what they do there. Does every police force have a Q branch?
Well, none of that storyline makes any sense at all, because the whole thing afterwards is like, well, what is it? Well, we've taken it, you know, we've taken this, you know, this SUV, and we've armor plated it, and we put guns all over it. But don't get a scratch on it because it's a prototype.
If you could get a scratch on it, you would have failed at your job, Michael J. Pollard,
yeah,
popular character actor.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things where you're like, really, you're gonna have a hard time putting more guns and armor plating on an SUV. Is that really that big of a stretch? It's no, it's a prototype. It's not like it's a floating car. It's not like it's a robot. It's like, look, there's a lot of proprietary technology.
Wait, did you
just
accidentally propose a way we could make this movie 100 times better with floating cars
and robots
and underwater battle sequences? No, never mind. We should stop. We should stop right here. This is when it gets cash. So. Again, but why do they have a Q branch? That's still gonna. Does anyone here work for a law enforcement agency that can explain to me whether or not they do actually have research and development that makes weapons for old ladies?
I would like to say I hope that nobody that listens to us actually works for any kind of job that requires any kind of responsibility.
That is very true. Excuse me while I drink my floating beer. Yeah, and so on top of all of this, again, we've mentioned that in 1989, this movie went $20 million over budget and had to be completely re-edited. The best part about the re-editing process... Thank you very much. Thank you, Garcon. The best part about the re-editing process is they couldn't get the guy who did the music to come back and do new music. So, you know, the guy who did the music originally was Harold Faltmeyer, who also did music for movies like Beverly Hills Cop, which is referenced in the movie... And it's hilarious to me that they make reference to Beverly Hills Cop as if, like, paying a little bit of tribute to Harold Faltmeyer, and then nobody bothered to fucking call him and tell him, by the way, we're reshooting a bunch of stuff and we need new music. So there's not even one composer on this movie. Every single, like, role on the film has at least three deep on the bench.
Except for Stallone.
Except for Stallone, because there was no way anyone else was going to play that role.
Schwarzenegger.
No. No, I can't imagine Schwarzenegger. Remember Schwarzenegger in glasses and suspenders? It was Junior. Do you remember Junior? Because we've repressed it. Exactly.
I was
just... You liked Junior?
No.
Okay, thank God.
No.
This podcast almost ended forever.
I was just going to point out that, like, there might be an alternate universe where Stallone walks off instead and we get Schwarzenegger Swayze.
God damn it.
And Schwarzenegger Swayze sounds kind of fucking awesome.
Because even if the dialogue is bad, you would never be able to tell with Schwarzenegger because you wouldn't have the slightest clue what he's actually saying. Yeah. Okay, no, I kind of like this idea. Tango and Cash 2, we're working on it. Plus, this movie, if
he thinks
nothing
he's
else.
The Terminator. The Terminator's a pussy.
The Terminator's a pussy! Tango.
Also, Cash.
Okay, back on track. This movie also, one of the biggest failings, I think, is that it introduced us to the world's least sexy craze, and that is, of course, strip drumming.
Point of note, Terry Hatcher doing anything in the late 80s, early 90s was sexy.
And that principle is pushed to the limit by the scene in the dance club.
Except that she's doing it to Yaz, or as the Brits might know them as, Yazoo. In fact, see, this woman over here said Yazoo at the same time. When I told you that earlier, you were like, that's the nerdiest fucking
That is the nerdiest thing you've ever said. We're talking about Tango and Cash, and I still think that's the nerdiest thing you've ever said.
Who doesn't love erasure?
I really thought you were going to say a racist. It was like, this took a dark turn.
We're not in
this is like the first cut of Tango and Cash.
We're not in Texas anymore there, Chief. You got to slow down on the racist stuff. Like, that is in play in Minnesota.
Our state is a post-apocalyptic wasteland. My favorite part, though, about Terry Hatcher's burlesque percussion, bringing the noise.
Okay, wait, hold on. Your second favorite part.
My second favorite part of her burlesque, bringing the noise, bringing the awkward, is the fact that they didn't even bother to ADR the drumming, and she's horribly offbeat. So she looks like an infant who was given a tiny little drum set for Christmas, and she's just like, ha 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 ha! And it's like the most uncomfortable, like, I feel like if I'm turned on right now, I am a terrible person because she may have Down syndrome.
But that's the best kind of turned on to be. I mean, it's not.
And now we're back to first draft. First edit of Tango
Cash.
It's
not really all that great if you don't feel bad about it.
That should have been our slogan for this show, by the way. The movie's not great unless you feel bad about it. Unless you feel bad for being a fan. Oh my God!
Wait, you went for the mentally handicapped joke, and I'm the asshole.
Yeah,
I'm the asshole.
First of all, I respect the mentally handicapped. I do not respect whatever the fuck Terry Hatcher is doing with that drum.
That
is the point that I was trying to make. I do have to point out, though, that For two cops who have never met, never worked together before, everyone in LA seems to really want them to pair up. I mean, you have the villain of the movie, played to absurd perfection by Jack Palance, who says things again like, "Cash and Tango. Tango and Cash." Like, he's, like, pitching the movie as it's going on.
"There's these two guys who are really fucking with my shit. I should get them together."
He's sitting in a limo.
What a great idea.
He's sitting in a limo with James Hong and other bad guy. And both the other bad guys are like, "Why don't we just kill him?" And Jack Palance is like, "No, I have an elaborate metaphor involving mice. Can we talk about a little bit?"
All of a sudden, the people laughing, you know exactly who's seen this fucking
movie.
Yeah,
exactly.
Why does the evil villain have a rat maze built into his office?
Tango.
Pulls out rats.
Tango.
Cash.
Before we get to that, let me point out that even though no one in this, they've never met each other, everyone in the town really wants them to work together. Everyone in LA wants this movie to happen because if you look at any given headline, they reference them by name. As if these cops are as popular as, like, star athletes or TV stars. You know, when you sit down at the breakfast table and you're like, "I wonder what my favorite cop in this town is doing," the movie has you covered with spinning headlines as the premier plot device of the whole film.
Now, the beauty of this particular moment is you didn't get to capture this moment in its entirety, but if you watch it in letterboxing, you can actually see the entire page.
Oh my God, yes.
And over to the side, over on the far side of the screen over there, was another article, you know, as they do in the newspaper. Here's the main article, and here's like eight articles about it. And one of them says, "Listen not to the critics."
Which I feel
it appears
might
at the
be.
End of the movie, it's like, don't listen to what the critics have to say about this pile of shit.
It's
this
like subliminal,
adorable pile of shit, but listen not to the critics.
Yeah, it's subliminal messaging to the audience, like, just don't read the reviews. Just go see it. You're gonna go see the movie. It stars Kurt Russell and Sylvester Stallone. Of course you're gonna go see it.
Now, you know, I feel like we're being a little rough on this because it
deserves it.
And yet Kurt Russell and Sylvester Stallone are fucking awesome.
That's true.
Movie.
That's true.
Kurt Russell is at his Kurt Russelliest.
Kurt Russelliest. Yes. I do love Kurt Russell.
He is positively delightful and at the top of his game here. You know, he is clearly not showered in like 8 days, like most of his movies.
Or us anytime we record this podcast.
And Sylvester Stallone is not killing everyone he sees.
I know, a lot of restraint. Except for that one part where he fires a gun at a gas truck to prove that he is right.
Yeah.
Which, my favorite part about that is, what if he had been wrong? That's just a huge gamble. Like, no, I'm right about this truck containing cocaine, and I'm going to prove it by firing my snub-nosed .38 at a fucking gas truck.
Who's driving the gas truck?
Oh my God, who's driving the gas truck is Robert Zadar.
And how big is his head?
Robert Zadar's head is the size of a small planet. I think so when Pluto... When Pluto was designated not a planet, it's specifically because Robert Zadar's head took that spot.
Yes.
Like, they couldn't have both of them in the same orbit, in the same galaxy.
So here's my question. How the fuck does Stallone miss?
This is a very good question.
This is the biggest logic flaw in the movie.
When he shoots at the window of the car.
He's shooting at Zadar, and he cannot hit that wide of a head.
He literally cannot hit the broadside of a face. That's entirely what we learned from that scene. But before we skim over it completely, let's go back to Jack Palance, who, by the way, is way too into rodents. Just like way too... This guy is fucking those mice. That is the only thing I can possibly think is happening.
Tango,
he keeps a box
cash.
Of mice in his desk like he is Richard Gere. I don't understand. Really? Okay. Thank you. One person who isn't still hung up on Richard Gere. The Breathless remake is great. I'll grant you that. But let's move on a little bit.
Do I really have to show you Primal Fear?
No, I've seen Primal Fear. It was several years ago. It's fine. But he does. He builds an elaborate glass-top rat maze in the middle of the office and ostensibly uses it for just the one metaphor, which is my favorite part, is that there's a team of guys that he puts on the payroll and he's like, "Today, I'm painting this absurdly complicated metaphor about getting rid of my enemies, and I need a bar that's also a maze." And that's all those people do. They're like, okay, so For your illustration today, we are spending thousands of dollars to create a gaudy rat maze that will serve. I have to believe that he used it for other purposes, because otherwise it's just a waste of time and materials. So every decision that he made from that point forward, like he's sitting in the office, it's 12 o'clock, and he's like, I don't know which a Subway sub to get. And his assistant's like, fuck it, go to the rats. We're gonna go to the rats. That's the only way we're gonna decide between the sweet chicken teriyaki and the meatball sub.
This does make sense of one of the lines in the movie, though. There is that section where he's like, and Gabriel Cash has cost me $60 million in deals.
You could probably recoup that by stop building rat mazes.
But yeah, and then he goes to, and Tango has cost me significantly more. See, he was trying to figure out what he was passing the cost of building the rat maze onto Tango.
Yes.
And so he wasn't quite sure exactly how much he's lost in street value, because what is the street value of a rat maze that you use for a metaphor?
That's like, what is the sound of one hand clapping kind of a thing, right? Like, it's one of those Zen riddles that we'll never solve.
Tango and Zen.
Tango and Zen. I mean, he is completely fucking bug nuts in this movie. I mean, we would not see Palance play another crime kingpin as batshit insane until literally the next year when he did it again in Batman. So he really spread the roles out and took some diverse, different
roles. I don't know, and he kind of did it beforehand with City Slickers.
There were no mice in City Slickers.
That you know of.
That I know of, but... Can you imagine
Richard Gere?
If that is how Billy Crystal found himself, is that Curly took him aside and is like, I have a rat maze. I'm going to put cows in it. I don't even know how you're going to do it. I think he's gone completely senile at this point. Maybe somebody should get Grandpa back to the home. So, Cargill, what else do you love about Tango and Cash? I feel like we have been kind of picking on it a little bit just because hilarious.
It's kind of weird because I rewatched. I mean, I saw this in theaters when it came out, and I've watched it multiple times over the course of my life, and just rewatched it recently. And I wanted to rewatch it because, in fact, I'd mentioned that when we first talked about it. You're like, do you really need to rewatch it? And I'm like, I don't feel like I remember the film well enough to talk about it. And sat down to watch him like, no, I remember every scene of this film. I just thought there was more to this movie than there actually is. And the thing is it's got... The thing that really works about this movie is it has so many fucking amazing set pieces. Like, the thing is they really don't take any time before they ship Tango and Cash off to prison. Like, they're just like, by minute 20, you're in fucking prison and best of luck. There it goes, and you're just like, oh. And now, then they fall into this thing where they just get train fucked for like 10 minutes.
Whoa. Figuratively.
Figuratively.
We did just say they went to prison. And the next thing you said is that they got train fucked for 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, but they have all... I mean, come on. Does it get much worse than ending up with Clint Howard with a set of slinkies as a cellmate?
No. It's like, even Clint Howard in Apollo 13 would have been a better cellmate than Clint Howard in Tango and Cash, whose only defining characteristic is that he has a slinky and he killed his best friend.
So they're clearly going through all this bad shit, and then, in the middle of the night, the guys come in, throw bags over their head, drag them downstairs.
Okay, you're still talking about train fucking, aren't you?
I really am.
Okay, good.
No, but then we get the menacing scene where Jack Palance walks out of the steam. And then the guys just get the shit kicked out of them.
Yeah.
And then they get tortured. And then they get thrown back into their cells. And then they get fucked with again. And they decide to break out. And there's all these great action sequences through this that lead up to, like, the centerpiece action sequence, which is, like, it's just, like, kind of one of the things we haven't mentioned, this movie was the very last movie.
Of the 80s.
Of the 80s. It was
released in the last week of 1989.
And it was kind of like the one of those ultimate 80s moments where it's like, how the fuck are we going to get out of prison? I know, we're going to be in the rain, we're going to jump off of the walls of the prison, grab onto a core, you know, onto an electric cable, and slide down the electric cable.
You have no idea how much I wanted the 60s Batman theme to start playing when they did that.
But they both can't do it because now we have to have a fight with Robert Zadar,
yes.
which then it ends with this amazing electric electrocution. It's like every set piece in this movie is just like, look, we literally took every fucking 80s movie ever made and crammed them into this movie and just kind of made all of these scenes awesome. Like, none of it kind of fits together perfectly, but each piece is individually kind of fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And since you're in it, you're really enjoying it. Like, when you step back and look at it, it's kind of like, man, this movie really isn't all that well thought out.
But how dare you?
But while you're watching it, you're just like, this scene's awesome, and this scene's awesome, and this is cheesy dialogue that actually makes me laugh, and Terry Hatcher was almost never hotter than she was here. She's incredibly hot in this. Of course, you know, the older, you know, 40-something geeks in here are going, point of order, sir, I believe you're referring to the ABC television smash hit Lois and Clark,
No, we're not.
Which would be... Terry Hatcher is Lois. Older guys in the audience? Yes.
I love how they could only raise one hand.
They could only... That was exactly the point.
This is a really sticky room we're in all of a sudden.
There's all of these elements of everything there. All of the elements that they're trying to hit in this movie, except for logic, they hit perfectly. It is fun. It is funny. The chemistry between Stallone and Russell is fantastic. You just enjoy it all the way through, and it is the perfect example of that film that lots of critics like to say, well, if you take your brain out, it's
don't
to watch.
Do that. Never take your brain out of the experience.
Never take your brain out of the experience, but it's so much stupid fucking fun.
Yeah,
and I just like, yes, is it fucking retarded that they have a stupid fucking battle van at the end of the movie? Yes. Is it fucking awesome? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
It is so fucking awesome.
I love how, and I've said this before, how recklessly entertaining, like the scene at the end that we were talking about where they're, you know, the back of the SUV is on fire and they're destroying a quarry, which how would anyone even notice?
And then
destroyed
a couple of scenes of Jack Plant going, no.
He's watching the movie with us.
Yes.
That's my favorite part of that moment is Jack Palance is sitting there like, oh, why won't they kill? No. Seriously, if he just pulled up popcorn and like ate a piece and then gave a piece to a mouse sitting on his shoulder, that wouldn't have fazed me at all. I'd be like, yes, based on the information that you have presented, movie, that works for me. That totally works for me.
I was waiting for him to run the rat maze to go, am I going to win?
Am I going to win? No. So the SUV catches on fire.
I kind of love the idea of I want to go back in time and make a movie where I can give Jack Palance an 8-ball as a prop. A magic 8-ball. And just, I have an elaborate plot to kill Tango and Cash. Wait again.
Outcome unclear.
There it is.
So the... God damn you, Jack Palance. May he rest in peace. So the back of the SUV catches on fire, and when filming was over, they couldn't put the fire out, you know, like a professional film set would be able to do. So Kurt Russell and Sylvester Stallone get caught in this cross-draft and are literally inches away from being completely incinerated. Like, Stallone's hair gets singed. I'm assuming it's his chest hair. I don't know.
No, it wasn't.
It probably wasn't. But... So they shot that battle sequence with 11 cameras. Like, they shot the hell, because the reason they did that is they only had one shot. It was literally so dangerous, they could only shoot that scene once. And I think that kind of commitment to entertainment where you're saying, safety regulations, please. We're just going to shoot the hell out of this. We're going to do it one time. And if we fuck it up, people are going
to
die.
Just to put a pin in this, they destroyed a rock quarry.
Yes, but they also almost
like
destroyed
a quarry,
people.
The whole point of a quarry is that you put a big fucking hole in the ground, and they fucked up that.
they literally didn't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
Yes, they really could. They just fucked up a giant hole in the ground. Like, we can't use that hole again.
Well, no one's ever going to dig a hole in this spot again. Scorched earth. And how great is the henchman who's played by Brian James is possibly the best worst henchman of all time.
Ponytail is awesome.
Ponytail is awesome. My favorite part about that is that Brian James, initially, his character had very few lines. And the way that he got Stallone to write him a bigger part is that he decided, you know what I'm not good at? British accents. you know what I should totally do in this movie? A British accent. So we get like this bullshit Cockney. It's just, it sounds ridiculous. Like you're listening to him like, is he having a stroke?
He's attempting to be do Cockney, and instead it comes out Australian?
It comes out like South Afro-Australian, which is not a thing. And the best part is that Stallone heard that. Stallone, who again, by the way, not in charge of the movie, decides to write a bigger character for Brian James just so that we get more of Ponytail's awful, like, oh, toss off, whatever. And it's just like, oh my God.
Well,
what
do
you
think maybe Stallone didn't want to have the worst accent?
I think that's what it was. I think it's like, well, right, characters are completely unintelligible. I think they bonded over
it. That was the end of First Blood, right?
It was the end of First Blood. Have you ever tried to, like, listen to every word John Rambo says? Because he's unintelligible to begin with, and then he's crying. So it's like a double dose of what the hell did you just say? I feel like Troutman's like, yeah, totally, man.
What the fuck did he just say?
So I think that's my favorite part, though, of the criminal organization under Jack Palance is that, that and James Hong and Jack Burton have a reunion in the film. So Lopan and Jack Burton totally at odds once again. And I'm pretty sure it's a little unclear because they're both standing outside the glass door, but I'm pretty sure it's Kurt Russell who ends up killing James Hong.
I think it might be Stallone, sadly.
Oh, no. No, movie, you failed. You failed. But I want to go back to something you said about this being the last film of the 1980s. It was released December 22nd, 1989. It's, in a lot of ways, the loving goodbye letter to everything that made this decade of film so memorable, so beloved, so uneasily macho, like defensively macho a little bit. Like perhaps there's some things that they're hiding, and this movie clearly has a few moments like that. But I love the weird meta stuff from both of the guys. I mean, Stallone puts a lot of his... I do. I legit love...
He thinks he's John Rambo.
Rambo is a pussy. But there's also the line about, you know, Kurt Russell asking him, did you stop for Danish? And he says, I hate Danish. Which you think, oh, it's a cop joke. No, it's not. No, it's a reference to the fact that he had just gotten divorced from Brigitte Nielsen.
Yeah.
Who is Danish. So basically, like, this is Stallone's Judd Apatow moment where he's just dealing with his own personal shit in the middle of the movie, and you're like, what? Should we be watching this? I feel like you should just go to counseling. And meanwhile, Kurt Russell is essentially just Jack Burton with a badge, which I feel, again, is why James Hong plays one of the criminals. And then there's also a moment, it starts making references to all of these other 80s action movies. Like, they call Robert Zadar Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
There's a moment that is wholesale lifted from Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, yeah.
Where they're having this, they're like doing...
You're Section 8!
You're a Section 8, man! I heard you were a Section 8! I don't want any part of this, man! You're crazy! You're gonna be in the Psycho Hall of Fame! And it's essentially the exact same speech between Danny Glover and Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon.
Which predates this by like 2 years?
It predates this probably by like 6 weeks, honestly, but... And then there's a scene where, you know, the scene that you mentioned in the beginning where Stallone, like, pulls the car around and faces down the truck with a gun. Totally stolen from Police Story. So there's Jackie Chan in there. And then, of course, there's the joke where Stallone's captain calls him Beverly Hills WAP. Which, offensive on so many levels.
So many levels.
But, so you have all, it's like the movie is referencing every other incredible action movie and action hero of the decade. So in a lot of ways, this movie is the first step toward The Expendables. Like, this movie is like the first step in that direction. And I didn't know this until we were prepping for the show, but apparently Kurt Russell was actually originally offered the role of Mr. Church in The Expendables. And he was the one action star on the planet who went, that sounds like a terrible idea. That I don't want to do that. So instead, they went with Bruce Willis. But like literally, the Bruce Willis part in The Expendables was originally offered to Kurt Russell, which makes so much sense when you watch this movie. I know, right? It's disappointing.
Yeah, the one guy who apparently kept his dignity out of the 80s was Kurt Russell. Well, fuck yeah,
yeah,
but...
Fuck yes, indeed.
And of course, you know, it's very applicable since we are at Convergence, where every Thursday night they show a Kurt Russell movie every
year. I didn't know that.
And I know you didn't. And that's why when you said Tango and Cash, you said, oh, that's perfect. And that's why when we were on the elevator today, I was like, oh, hey, did you go see Opening Ceremonies or did you go to Escape from New York?
And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Your favorite fucking movie on the planet.
Did they show Escape from New York and I wasn't there?
Yes, they did.
No. It was the worst. But that brings us, of course, to my favorite part of any show that we do, and that is the junk food pairing.
Are we doing the junk food pairing before we're doing
Yes, we are, and I will explain why in just a moment. If you would shut the fuck... No, I'm just kidding.
I will shut the fuck up here in just a second when I drink my beer.
Is that another floater? Did you drink another floater? Good. All right.
Pussy, you've got two unopened beers over there.
I am doing a professional show. Trying to keep it together up here. So for this... That's such a lie. I can't even say it with a straight
face.
You can't. I'm sorry, hold on.
We're junk food cinema.
So for this week's junk food pairing, I have chosen the Snickers peanut butter square. Because when you have a product known for its quantity of peanuts, and you want to make a distinctive change to said peanutty product... You might want to go a little further outside the box than simply adding peanut butter to it. This would be equitable to if Mounds Bars decided, now with a splash of coconut milk. It's not that far outside of what it already is. And again, the pairing of Tango and Cash isn't so much a staggering study in contradictions as it is in slight shades of variation. I mean, Tango and Cash are as different as oil and slightly more watered down oil. And that is why I have chosen this for our junk food pairing. And we actually have several Snickers peanut butter squares, which I am actually going to distribute to everyone. Let's not make a joke about this. But I'm going to pretend that they are prizes in a little game I like to call Tango or Cash. So here's how this is going to... Cash. So here's how this is going to work. I am going to need a volunteer. Somebody just raise your hand. Just do it. Okay, yes, you, sir. So I'm going to ask you a question.
All right,
and you're going to have to answer whether the thing I'm referring to is Tango or Cash.
All right.
Got it. Which, is it Tango or Cash? Which drives a late model Cadillac convertible?
Cash.
The answer is Tango!
Oh.
Throw him one anyway. This is not a real game. This was never intended to be a real game. Okay, I need another volunteer. This is as easy as it gets, folks. Yes, in the back. Your question. Which, Tango or Cash, which unwisely attempts to calm a Russian whose car he has just stolen and wrecked by shrugging, "Welcome to America"? You literally have a 50-50 chance of getting this right. And you have a 100% chance of getting candy. The answer is Cash! Well done. Give that man some candy. And by the way, why does that guy scream about perestroika? Like, why does the movie get political for like 15 seconds?
Why does it do much of anything? I mean, really.
It
goes off on weird fucking tangents for no apparent reason.
Also, where did the old lady in that parking garage come from? I think you pointed this
out
when we were watching it.
No, like, they're driving through a garage, and all of a sudden an old lady with cans starts pushing out into the middle, and Cash has to save her. But it's like, they cut over to the side, and there's literally a cement wall there.
Where did she come from?
For this girl, she just materialized.
Ghosts! Homeless ghosts is the number one problem in this country that I think we need to deal with. Ghosts of the homeless.
And as you pointed out, you know, the guy he steals the car from has all these presents. Is it Christmas?
Is this actually a Shane Black movie? Is it Christmas?
Is it Christmas?
We never know that?
Or is he just buying people a lot of presents? We don't know. He's just carrying a lot of presents, and then Cash steals his fucking car and smashes it to pieces.
Yeah.
And then says, "Welcome to America. I'm a shitty cop."
Alternatively, since the fall of communism in Russia happens shortly after this movie was released, maybe it's a combination of this film and Rocky IV that finally destroyed the Berlin Wall. I think that's probably the more logical answer.
I doubt it.
All right. Well, history will prove me right.
I want to throw another candy.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes. Who else would like to play Tango or Cash? Yes, you, sir. All right. Tango or Cash, which is referred to as Pee-wee by the other?
Tango.
And the answer? In this completely non-homoerotic sequence, is Tango. Congratulations.
Actually, I'm going to give him candy, but point of order, asshole.
Point of order?
Point of order.
We're almost done, and we're just now doing point of order.
They both refer to each other as Pee-wee, because while in this scene, Cash refers to Tango as Pee-wee, later on in the movie, Tango then recurs to him as Pee-wee after the terrible joke, "Why is mine smaller? Genetics. Pee-wee."
Well played, Mr. Cargill. Well played.
I've actually watched this movie.
You're totally fired. All right, we got one more round of Tango or Cash. Yes, you, ma'am. The question, Tango or Cash, who has the biggest face?
That's a trick question.
It is a trick question. The answer is Robert Zadar. But candy, of course, anyway.
Oh. Somebody hand her candy. Or actually, keep the candy. Oh, there we go.
All right.
It's a trap.
It is a trap. Robert Zadar, we unfortunately... By the way, if you haven't seen Maniac Cop... I'm not kidding. It is fucking brilliant.
This is the part where you're all going to have to take a drink.
Take a drink, because we're going to do an episode.
Why have we not done an episode on Maniac Cop?
Oh, because we're going to do an episode of the entire franchise. The entire Maniac Cop, because 2 is actually better than 1. But the point is, Robert Zadar in Maniac Cop is absolutely phenomenal. We just lost Robert Zadar within the last year, and it's very sad. He had an immense talent, the jawline to match.
His body actually died before his face did.
Yes.
Oh, you laughed at that. You cold, sick bastard.
What is wrong with you? Either
of you. You should feel awful about yourselves.
I feel like if they were going to feel awful about themselves, they're in the right room for that.
They're kind of in the right room, man.
So this has been our completely rambling episode about Tango and Cash. But since we have some time left, I want to open the floor to questions. Maybe about Tango and Cash. Maybe about other cult films.
Maybe about junk food cinema.
Maybe about your favorite snack food. Maybe about what the hell junk food cinema is or who the hell we are. Whatever you would like to ask. This is totally free form, and we will probably throw candy at you if you ask a question, because we are not above bribing the audience whatsoever. And I'm happy to give you another piece of candy as well, ma'am.
Well, I'm just doing this for the candy.
Of course. That's why we have the candy. So the question is, when we pick a movie, do we get to watch it ahead of time a few times?
It depends on how well we know it.
Yes.
It's really one of those things where our decision is very scientific. It usually involves, hey, what do you want to do? And it's like, hey, have you ever seen this movie?
The floating beers is the most scientific thing we have ever done on the show.
And the scientific part is that we poured out just enough water and dropped in the beers without spilling a drop.
It's like one of those water-drinking birds, except that we're the birds.
Because we understand Archimedes and bad movies. And those are like the two things we get.
I get half of those things.
But so we literally just kind of kick it around. And like we just got done with Teen Month. And for me, I did...
Teen Comedy Month. I really think we should make that very clear. Especially after all the references to train
you
fucking.
You might have gotten done with Teen Comedy Month.
You're the one that brought up train fucking and then mentioned Teen Month. I think we should just make the distinction very clear.
The laws in Texas
don't
are very
do that.
Different.
Do not open that can of worms. But in answer to your question, I literally watched Tango and Cash 5 times this week. Because it was on YouTube. What? Groaning? It's Tango and Cash. I needed to watch it 2.5 times per person in the title. What is wrong with you?
That's 10 hours of your life.
Also, here's more candy.
We just cannot land that.
No, we can't. Yes, sir.
So is this kicking off with Robert Zadar month? And are you going to do Samurai Cop?
First of all, how awesome is it that Robert Zadar was in both Maniac Cop and Samurai Cop? The only thing missing was Face Cop. Which is a movie I'm working on. Do not steal it.
Or Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD.
Why was he not in Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD? No, this is actually the start of Buddy Cop Month. We are going to be doing I Come in Peace, which is a Buddy Cop movie. Yes! These are our people!
Go in pieces.
You are officially junkies, my son. So We're doing Running Scared.
And we're going for a deep cut and doing Freebie and the Bean.
Freebie and the Bean, which are all outstanding buddy cop movies. Some of them are a little bit cheesy. You Come in Peace, otherwise known as Dark Angel.
Excuse me?
Are you really going to sit there and tell me that movie's not cheesy? He fires CDs.
Everybody who's here right now is going to see me walking around Con tomorrow wearing my I Come in Peace t-shirt.
Again, they're gonna be... I'm not saying I don't love it. I'm just acknowledging the fact that it's a little bit cheesy. You go in pieces, asshole.
It's cheesy as fuck.
Okay, thank you.
I mean,
the only argument I made was that it's a little bit cheesy. You acted like I said Cargill's mother is a whore. Which I have only said 3 times in the span of the entirety of this podcast. All for good reason. The
truth is, it's not a very good movie, but it's kind of amazing.
It is an amazing film.
It's really kind of spectacular. I was like one of 12 people who saw it opening weekend before it closed immediately. And
good for you, sir.
Yeah, and it was kind of an amazing thing, so much so that everybody here in the States tends to call it Dark Angel because the only way you could get it for like a decade was on the import from Japan, where it was called Dark Angel.
Which is weird because it's its Canadian title, which we had to get through Japan. So it's a very international film because it also stars a gigantic Swede. It's a very international film.
It's a science fiction drug cop procedural buddy cop movie, and it's kind of awesome.
And all of the things you just said make me want to watch it again right now.
Yeah.
So yes, any other questions?
Heads up.
Yes. No, you asked a question.
Get candy.
That's how sports work. Yes.
Oh. We're expecting people to catch shit at a geek con. I'm sorry.
We're also expecting the person throwing them at a geek con to be aimed. Yeah, anyway.
So what's your thoughts on like Kurt Russell's 15-minute fist fight with Keith David and They Live?
That's actually Rowdy Roddy Piper and They Live. But the question is valid. That is the greatest fist fight scene of all time.
It's up there.
Not just because of how brutal it is, but because that shit goes on for like 20 minutes.
It's really fucking long.
Like, by the time one of them is kneeing the other in the crotch, you're like, well, that's like the least painful thing I've seen so far. Yeah,
but definitely not Kurt Russell.
Should have been Kurt Russell. No, I like Roddy Roddy Piper. I'm gonna keep it.
You do realize we've covered, in the span of like 2 months, we've covered 3 Kurt Russell movies.
Yeah, because Kurt Russell is one of the patron saints of junk food cinema. In fact, my internet handle often, since my last name is Salisbury and I love Escape from New York so much, they refer to me as Steak Plissken. Because, so feel
by
free.
By they, you mean you.
My mom. My mom's awesome. She really supports what we do. Any other questions?
We still have candy.
No? No one? All right. Oh, yes.
All right, so do you have a dream pairing?
A dream pairing for a buddy cop movie? That's an awesome question.
Or any two movies?
Anything.
I do.
Let's stick with, okay, go for it.
I have two movies I really want to program together, and one of these days I'm hoping I get a chance to program a theater. I really want to show the movie Sullivan's Travels, a classic black and white film starring Lana Turner. And I want to. It's all about. If you've never seen Sullivan's Travels, it's an amazing film you need to see. It's all about this director who wants to make this deep, meaningful film about the trials and tribulations of everybody during the Great Depression. And this is happening during the Great Depression. And he realized the only way he can tell it is by going out on the road and pretending to be one of them and going out and just living the experience of the common man. And the studio wants him to make a comedy. But he's like, no, I'm going to make this movie. And my movie is called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And he then, over the course of the movie, realizes, he learns why people watch movies. We don't watch movies because we want to see dark, depressing, you know, true renditions of what everyone's going through. People know what people are going through. We go to the movies to be entertained and to laugh. And he learns that lesson and never gets to make his movie. The Coen brothers, some 60 years later, would turn around and make Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the comedy version of the Great Depression story. And I would love to pair those together and show them back to back.
That's about as much applause as we usually get, so.
Huzzah!
I would love to show, if this is the topic, I would love to show Point Break and The Fast and the Furious back to back, because it will make you realize that the Fast and the Furious is a remake of Point Break, right down to the fact that there is a bizarre subplot in both movies about eating tuna fish sandwiches to get closer to the girl that you find attractive.
The beauty. We'll let the audience kind of
The beauty is that not only does
the Fast and the Furious rip off Point Break, it also rips off Gone in 60 Seconds, which came out like 2 years before it.
If you replace surfing with street racing, and by the way,
why wouldn't you?
Do you remember the plot of Fast and the Furious? I know, that's hilarious. But the first Fast and the Furious is about stealing DVD players. Like, when you boil everything else about that movie down, it's about stealing DVD players. That's it. That was their grand design as master criminals. They just wanted to steal DVD players.
They are VHS DVD combos.
They are VHS DVD combos.
They are. One of the rarest and most valuable of the DVD players for us geeks. So it turns out they're really just fucking movie geeks.
Yeah. If there were Laserdisc players in the back, I would have joined Toretto's crew like that. Because family. Because family.
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 Family. By the way, if you ever want to kill yourselves, you should try marathoning all seven of the Fast and the Furious films and taking a shot anytime Vin Diesel says or refers to the word family.
Am I doing Stallone or am I doing Vin Diesel? You can't tell. There's actually a panel I want to point out tomorrow. There's a panel called Losing to Win, which is a Fast and the Furious panel that I will also be on at 3:30 in Atrium 3. So definitely check that out. But we are Junk Food Cinema. Thank you so much for attending. You can come up and get candy if you'd like. We have a whole fucking bag. We are on filmschoolrejects.com every Tuesday. We're on iTunes, on Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/JunkFoodCinema. Super creative. But I think we need to end this the only way we can, which is, of course, on a freeze frame high five. Thank you very much for attending, guys. Join us next week. You bring the chainsaw, we'll bring the beer.